Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Like, the hip has more, like, sort of control over the whole body than, like, a hip. And it's much more intricate. I feel like even when I described the pain, I could never pinpoint it. It was, like, somewhere so deep inside my hip. But the pain is just so bad, like honestly, different level pain. And the only thing I'll sort of describe is, like, imagine you have a cut, yeah, and someone is just putting alcohol, salt, and putting their fingers in it. That's the sort of pain it felt like. So definitely a lot of, like, nights after games and stuff where I'm just at home crying to myself, just like my head's gone. And yeah.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of the Beautiful Game Podcast. I'm with the main man, Ditch. What are you saying, my guy?
I'm good, my bro. Happy to be here again. Another week of content, another week of consistency, and another amazing story. So looking forward to this pod.
No, definitely. I think this is the first pod we're recording post Nigel James. And I just want to, like, shout out everyone for the feedback, because it's been amazing. All the comments and all of that kind of stuff has really touched us, so we appreciate it.
No, definitely. Even parents, a lot of parents have reached out to us and said that, you know what, that they're going to use that to sort of, like, as a guideline to speak to their kids, players as well, people in the women's game, the whole footballing community has, like, responded to it. So love and respect.
No, definitely. I think before we introduce our guests, let me just quickly plug the socials. At @podcast_TBG on Twitter, TBG pod on TikTok, @pod_TBG on Instagram. Leave a comment in the YouTube, subscribe to the channel, like the video, as obviously all the interactions and engagement helps us grow the channel and get bigger and better guests in the future. The premise of this platform is to interview all stakeholders at every single level of football. So I think this is a special one that we have today.
100%, as I was saying, that we want to speak to parents, managers, coaches, sporting directors, players that might have had injuries and they've bounced back, or players that have had injuries and they've had to go into other ventures. So I think that one sort of ticks the box for today's episode.
No, 100%. We're delighted to announce we are joined in the studio by Keith Asare.
Welcome, bro.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you lot reaching out to me, and just delighted to obviously tell my story and just for people to understand it a bit more and, yeah, help other people.
Yeah, I have to say as well, from the start, you've been a pleasure to deal with, you know, when we messaged and we communicated, class act, man. So love for coming on, bro.
I appreciate it, bro.
No, man, big up yourself, bro. Who is Keith?
Myself. Who is Keith? I feel like I'm on a journey finding myself for sure. I feel like I sort of started to ask myself that question whilst I was going through injury. And I regularly speak to my brother, my friends about this, because I feel like a lot of people
regardless where they're at, they're always going to try find themselves and then ultimately find peace. So me, myself, I feel like my traits are, I'm a hardworking person, very determined, motivated, funny, good character, and just like to live life. I'll definitely say so.
So yeah. We saw you on holiday over the summer, having like a hot boy summer, really enjoying yourself. So how was your summer?
Summer was great. Obviously, business-wise was good, and it was also good to spend some time with some of my friends, and yeah, overall very good.
So like initially, we're going to start off with your football career, because I think a lot of people in the industry like will know you from your young career. So like, yeah, if you don't mind, just talk to us from the very start of your footballing journey.
Take it back to primary school. I remember, I'm not sure whether it was like year three or something, where I remember one summer me and my brother would just go to the park and play literally every day from like 1 p.m. to 10 p.m. every single day. And I remember I came back to school after the summer break and I said, guys, let's play a game. I remember I just went past everyone, kept scoring. And that sort of gave me the motivation to just continue going, continue pushing. Big shout out to Callum when I was younger. He was a coach. He used to literally train us in the park. And Joe Shields as well, who works at Southampton.
Oh, yeah, he was at Man City.
He was very good to me. Definitely tried to push me in the right direction. And starting off with Sunday league teams, I was at Junior Elite. Arguably one of the best Sunday league ever. Like, our team was something else. We won everything every year, all the time. Obviously, they produced players like Emil Smith-Rowe, Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
Colin. Because he was my coach at Palace, funny enough.
That must be back in the days. Colin's been around for a while. I was there for like 2 years. I remember I used to play left back, and then one day, I forgot the coach's name. But he's still there at Junior League. He put me centre midfield. I remember that game, I just bossed it, played. And then signed for Fulham, probably at the end of that season, which I was there. Fulham, I was there for around 2 years. But Fulham was like, at that time, I wasn't the player I was when I just finished my career. I was sort of a simple player, just pass it left, right, left, right, left, right. So I ultimately ended up leaving there. I had like 2 years out of the game where I was just at Massali, which is sort of like a place where people go to try get themselves back into a club. Ones of Town, they helped me sort of get trials here, there. And then ultimately just came down to Southend after Massali played a game against them. I scored like a hat trick. We won like 3-1 or something. And then there they just offered me a contract straight away.
So how old were you then?
How old was I? I would have been like 12, 13.
Okay, yes.
So I would have been like 12, 13, roughly around then. And at that time, I was very like unsure about joining Southend. I was thinking, do I want to play this low? Because obviously I see all my friends play at Chelsea, Arsenal, this and that. So I was thinking, should I take that step? Then after speaking to my parents, they said, yeah, just take it. Do what you need to do and you'll be gone soon. So, yeah.
So it's actually mad because obviously you went to Southend. It was probably like a difficult decision at the time. But I just want to scroll back a bit, if you don't mind, in regards to when did you realise that you have something, right? Because obviously all your boys are at Chelsea, Fulham, wherever. So what age did you realise that, hold on, I'm up to something here?
I think it was when I came out of Fulham that I sort of thought that, if I keep this sort of ability, work on it, then I can actually do something with it. And then when I got to Southend, I just felt like I was just playing with freedom, just enjoying myself every week. Then it just made things very simple. I remember I came in Southend, was playing up like 2-3 years. I even trained the first team. So Southend was where I sort of really loved football, you know. Ricky Duncan was there, great guy, great guy. he proper looked after me like I was his son, like proper. Because obviously that time I was young, I was going training by myself. It's like what, 11, 12-ish, going training by myself, Southend. But it was good though, because we had a good group. There was like 10 of us from London that get on the train, or later on there'll be a bus which everyone will go on. So it was quite a good family. But then as like time went on, the group went down and down because people get released and things like that. So there ended up being like 3 of us. But yeah, I would definitely say at Southend was where I sort of developed to another level.
Yeah, there was an interesting story that I saw that you were playing in the FA Youth Cup game, but you were underage. Mm-hmm. So the game had to get replayed because of you. So like, explain that situation.
To be fair, I don't know on Southend's behalf, but on mine, I was just doing my thing, playing well. It was a great opportunity for me. I think that sort of scaled me to another level when it came to like other clubs in England or even abroad. It was an enjoyable day. I'm surprised they even were allowed to play again. I thought the other team would just go through it, but it just shows the confidence they had in me, and I appreciate that for sure.
So for context, what age were you playing in the game? Because I know FA Youth Cup's what, 15, 16?
I think I was 13 or 14.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, so you're playing like 2 years above.
Yeah, probably like 2, 3, 4 years.
So how did you find it in terms of like physically? Because I know obviously different people get different like growth spurts at different times. So could you handle it? Were you like a ringer or?
Me, I like African food. Yeah. African food is strong. It keeps us good.
Like empathy.
Yeah. So literally, I've always been a strong guy for my age. So I didn't really see it like that. And I feel like I'm a quick learner. Mm-hmm. Football, life, everything. Show me something. And in a short time, I'll be able to adapt. So I feel like just like that.
I think this chat is interesting because obviously you said that you were at Fulham, but you're like, you were simple.
Yeah.
So what made you come out of your shell when you went to Southend? What was it about that environment that?
No, definitely. I just feel like I was just more free. I feel like because of the level I was at, I was like, well, what's there to lose? I'm just here having fun. And I feel like a lot of people should have that mindset, like playing football, like you're playing for yourself. Just what's the worst that can happen? Someone can shout at you. Just play, enjoy yourself, for sure.
So in terms of like Fulham, would you say you're almost like a big fish in a smaller pond, whereas Fulham, it's almost like, oh, Fulham, this is a Premier League team. I don't want to misplace a pass. Yeah. So Southend is like, the shackles off. Let me enjoy it.
No, definitely. Yeah, I definitely feel that like that. And how they treated me as well. I feel like personal relationships are really important in any sort of business in life. The relationship that I had with the older players, they loved me. The staff. It was like, honestly, like a pleasure to be at Southend, for sure.
You were saying that there was a lot of clubs circling after you after the game for Southend in the FA Youth Cup. Mm-hmm. So like, how was that for you, just a young guy, getting all of this attention? Like, what sort of teams were sniffing around?
At that time, probably like most of the clubs in sort of Champ and Premier League. I remember that time I had an agent at like 13 when I was there, and they were just saying, he's coming to watch. But I never really felt the pressure. I was just having fun, literally enjoying myself. And even not to forget, I got offered my scholarship at 13 at Southend. This was like 2 weeks after being there. They just said, take the scholarship. Actually, no, was it 2 weeks or after the game? One of the two, they offered me a scholarship. And I was like very hesitant to take it. And I just thought, why not? Let me take it. Then I was gone within 12 months after that. So,
gone from Southend to... Wow, so... Yeah, so how do you come to that decision-making process that, you know, there's a queue of clubs after my services? Why was it Nottingham Forest?
Nottingham Forest, like I said, the personal relationship. We played a game against Nottingham Forest at their ground. Had a great game. Played very well. After that, I was speaking to the players prior. So I formed a good relationship with like a few of the players. So joining there was like joining home, and the people there just made it feel good.
So was you aware that there was like a long-standing interest in terms of like Forest wanting you from early? Was that the case, or was it one of those ones that you played against them, then after that you had relationships?
I feel like playing against them escalated things.
Okay.
Because Southend, our sort of preseason schedule fixtures was to play against all the big clubs, because obviously a club like that is to sell players and they have a track record of doing it. Mm. So I feel like that just escalated things a bit quicker.
Mm. So in terms of obviously like going to Nottingham Forest, was that a smooth transaction or was the club a bit sort of obviously bitter in terms of losing you? Or how did that sort of go?
No, it was very smooth. Ricky just called me and said, like, the offers came in. You can go up to see the ground, whatever, with your family. They were very supportive of Southend. They didn't really hold me back. I remember a lot of people used to say, oh, you sign your scholarship, it's going to be so hard for you to leave. But if you're good enough, it doesn't really matter. And then, yeah, moving up there was, at the start, was a bit hard, definitely. Definitely homesick. Because obviously I'm 14 and away from my family. I remember I used to live with a host family.
Oh, like Diggs?
Not like, there was a Diggs, but I was too young for the Diggs. Okay. So I had to stay with a host family. And that process was quite a bit long. But yeah, at the start, it was quite hard, but then I got used to it.
So when you were moving up, cause I think, again, this is good for parents or younger players. Did you sort of, what's the word to say? How did you sort of acclimatise to getting up to that new area?
Hard question. I'm a very social person, my personality. So I think it is a case-by-case thing. But me, I'm very interactive and sort of know how to adapt. But for anyone else, I would just say try stay there for as long as possible, just so you can have that feeling that I live here, not have the support of going back to London all the time. Mm. And yeah, just think about the long-term picture that I'm here to be a footballer. Like, focus, be dedicated, and that's it.
So obviously you signed for Nottingham Forest. What are your family saying at the time?
No, they were very happy for me. I remember when they first offered me the contract, it was like a proper, like, we trust you, we believe in you, we know you're going to get to the level that we want you to get to. So it was a good decision by everyone, because we had the safety from the club, protection, and the trust, which most people want and need.
Mm. So in terms of your journey at Nottingham Forest, like, I remember seeing headlines of your next up. Yeah. It was you, Brennan Johnson, Alex Mighton. Like, there was a few of that young sort of generation. Cause I think before that you had the Matty Cashes. Yeah. So there was like a huge track record. So talk to us about that sort of youth team at Nottingham Forest.
No, our age group was one of the best, like 100%.
Yeah.
Especially looking back at it as well. I miss the times together with the guys. But the age group was good. We had Arvin, Brennan, Jaden Richardson, still playing now. Riley Harbottle, George Shelby, Josh Barnes, Will Swan, Alex Mighton, obviously played up. Then Ethan Deco, he played up as well with us. So the team was very strong.
Mm.
I just regret our FA Youth Cup run, because not everyone was fit for it. So we didn't necessarily push to the level we need to push to. But the squad was fun. And obviously we had a school sort of football program where we'll go to school in the morning, then train from like afternoon to the evening. So we proper became a family, like that age group, because they've done it specifically for us as well.
Okay, why was that then?
I think they just wanted to maximise us as much as possible.
Oh, so they changed the program from what they initially had just
Wow.
Wow. Okay, I know Reed was your manager as well.
Yeah.
Because he was an ex-player. I remember he used to have a wonder of a left foot at Tottenham. Yeah. Remember?
Yeah.
Stocky. Yeah, I remember him still.
So obviously you're flying. Your name's ringing bells at Nottingham Forest. What happens next?
At what age? 15, 16. I was doing well. I remember for my age group, I was doing well. And then that's when I had my first big injury. I broke my left leg. I remember in a game against Barnsley. I think that was my 18s debut. Yeah, 18s first start, sorry. Mm. And I was having a great game, very well. And then I was just running for the ball. I kicked the ball, ran for it. And then as I was going to take the next touch, my foot got stuck in the ground and he took me out. Then literally my bone was popping out. So it didn't even hurt. I remember I just looked at it, I thought, what's going on? I just screamed, put my head down. And then, yeah, that kept me out for like 5-6 months.
Wow. Okay. Hmm. Oh, and again, injuries is something that I think us as fans and people don't really realise the sort of effect it can have on a player. Yeah. So as that being your first serious injury, what sort of effect did it have on you?
I think at that time I was young, so I wasn't really too bothered about it, as in mentally didn't affect me. I had a good support group of people, still young, still learning. So I feel like that was good. My friends helped me a lot, because I'm a person which, like, I'm either extroverted or very introverted.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you catch me at one stage, then I want to stay in that stage. So I was a sort of extrovert, so I always want to have people around me. Always want to make sure I can talk to someone. So I feel like that was a good experience for me.
Because what's key is that you're away from home. So after getting that injury, did the club sort of, I don't know, bring family up? Or how sort of like connect to your loved one?
My family came up. They were there for a few days. That was good. Sometimes just seeing your family, just a breath of fresh air. Just seeing them. And obviously, I had younger siblings then, so I didn't really see them grow. I just sort of saw, every time I saw them, wow, you're bigger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was good to see that. But then my host family at Nottingham Forest was like, they were very good. I think I spoke to her not too long ago.
So you're still in contact?
Yeah. I'm a person that, like, if I know you and you've done well for me, I'm not going to like hide away from you.
I respect that, bro.
Like, when I go Nottingham, I try to sort of do a route where I see everyone one by one. But yeah, definitely, it was good.
So obviously your recovering from the injury set you back, what, 5-6 months, you said? Talk to us about that sort of road to recovery.
Road to recovery then. That road to recovery, to be fair, my ankle, even in the cold, I still feel it to this day.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, when it's like proper cold in the winter, my ankle will stiff up. But the road to recovery was good. I sort of enjoyed the hustle, especially when you can see the end picture, you know? Like, the first stage, can't do nothing. Second stage, start getting your feet. You start running, get on the balls, back to the pitch, you know? And I remember, like, first session back, I was just so hungry. So hungry to just impress, do well. Because, like, the player I was then, it's like, skills make everyone, like, excited, you know what I mean?
But did that sort of like change you, that injury? Because you hear it a lot of times after having a long-term injury, players are almost fearful of going into tackles and all of that kind of stuff. So did that have any sort of detrimental effect on you?
Not necessarily, not regarding like sort of fear and anything. I do believe it does take a while for you to get back to where you was. Even if you're like playing well, you know certain things aren't right. So I do feel like you do need a period in between where you're not too hard on yourself, and obviously the manager or club needs to understand that as well, which gives you that sort of protection and security that you know that I can still go out and perform.
So like after that, you come back from injury, you're flying again, that doesn't knock you back, and your name's ringing bells at Nottingham Forest. There's teams like Dortmund, they're interested in you. So like, explain to us that period where you were just absolutely dominating the youth scene.
I feel like it was just before like I was turned 17, so obviously I had a pro from when I joined, so it was just sort of making the right decision for the next step, and I was enjoying my football and enjoying that Nottingham Forest, so it was just the best decision to stay. And yeah,
and so so Dortmund were interested right before you got your pro?
Yeah, like around that time. Yeah.
Okay, so like in terms of your agent, did you sort of, was that of interest, or you were like, you know what, I'm calm here?
It was sort of just interest there, you know, sort of like if anything was to go down, then it would be a possibility, but nothing firm like on the table, you know what I mean?
So was there any other clubs as well at that time sniffing around?
Not that I can be 100% sure on, you know. I feel like at that point I was sort of proper focused on my football, just trying to make the best decision for. Because obviously that's what every kid wants, you know, the first pro contract. And then obviously the hardest is to secure the second, third.
Yeah. So even talk to us about getting your pro, because you started off at Fulham, took those 2 years out, went to Southend, went to Nottingham Forest, you're getting your pro. So like, explain to us how that made you feel, your family, your loved ones, friends.
Because I remember when I signed for Nottingham Forest, they gave me like a long contract, like 8 years.
Jeez, that's
not 7 years.
What, on the Chelsea thing?
It was crazy. And that was just something
else. What age? So that was that?
Like 14.
So they gave you a 7?
Yeah, until I stopped playing. A year before I stopped playing, yeah.
Wow.
So maybe what's that, 6 years, 7? Something like that.
Yeah, yeah, in and around. So that's really unheard of, I didn't know.
So
if a club's giving you that, you're saying, yeah.
So I'm a bit confused. So like you're saying at 14, you signed a 7-year deal, right?
Yeah.
So in between that, was there any other new deals?
In between?
Yeah.
Obviously, when it comes to your new contract, obviously you can negotiate, but it's just sort of the security, which we offered you this time.
That's very, I've never heard that. So in terms of signing your pro deal, what was the sort of integration into the first team? So once you signed, were you in the first team, like training with them or?
No, it wasn't as simple as that. I feel like there was a couple of things holding me back from proper pushing to the next level. And yeah, it was just more sign your pro, just push on, keep going. And eventually will come, yeah.
Okay, so was there like a roadmap? So you've signed your deal at 14. For the next year, you're going to be up in the 18s, 21, or how?
I think football can never have a road plan, you know.
Mm.
I feel like it's very, what's the word?
Unpredictable
unpredictable, and it's not really in your hands anyways, you know.
So what was holding you back?
What was holding me back?
Is that a deep one?
Yeah, I don't know. I have to think about it. Because before, I would say the managers, the coaches, but since stepping out of football, you get to realise or understand that you have to take full accountability. So the ability was always there. No one could ever question my ability. I remember it came to a stage where I wasn't working hard enough. I remember that. And then I addressed that. And then sort of consistency, then I addressed that. Then my big injury happened. So it was like I was just there, then come down. Then there, then come down. So it was like literally so close.
But it's an interesting thing that you've just mentioned. So you got a long-term contract. Somewhere in the back of your mind, obviously, you might not say it, but is there that sort of complacency that, geez, I've got 6 years, so the hard work has almost been done. Is there a bit of that?
Subconsciously, a little bit. But I remember I had some like elders that would always speak to me and be like, you have all the ability in the world. Like, you need to work harder. You need to push more. Because it's not the forest, we run a lot. Like, we work. So it took me a while to sort of accept that. And I feel like if I accepted that earlier, things would have definitely been different.
So were you like one of the guys where everyone like, you're going to make it. Yeah, you're going to. So like that, does that kind of, I don't know, seduce you into thinking, you know what? I just have to keep fit, keep playing. Then I'm going to get to that level.
I feel like at that age, I didn't understand what hard work was. You know, I loved to be on the ball. Didn't like to run. Just give me the ball to my feet and I'll do my thing. You know
okay,
what I mean?
So a bit of like a luxury player.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember one coach used to tell me that if you want to be a luxury player, you have to be unbelievable. Like, unbelievable. Then occasionally you might not have to get back. But until then, you have to work.
So obviously you're at Forest and you mentioned it earlier, you suffer your big injury. Talk to us about that moment.
So I remember I just kept having some pains in my right hip, you know, just sort of you're training and after you feel something. You told the physios, but they'll just be like, oh no, it's nothing serious, just ice it, then you'll be good. Then it just kept building up to the point where like, yo, this is crazy. Like, I can't play. I remember we had like back to back games, Tuesday and like Friday. I played the Tuesday game. I played well. Even though I'm like hurt. So I play again the next game after like 30 minutes. I have to come off. Can't do this. And then obviously I get my scan. But the scan is sort of like a, what's the word?
Ambiguous. It's like,
yeah. So we don't really know what's going on. And then we have another scan. And then that's when he says, yo, you can't put any pressure on this hip. Be on crutches from now on. And then that's when it sort of like picked up in my mind that I knew that this is a big injury.
So in terms of the injury, was it sustained while playing or was it just something like a pain that just developed over time?
play and overtime. Yeah, so a bit of both.
Okay.
Yeah.
So obviously you got a scan and they said this is a serious injury. Mm. What was the initial like diagnosis?
The initial diagnosis was hip bone marrow edema, a torn labrum, a regular shaped hip bone. Then obviously just the mobility side wasn't the best. So just like a lot of things in just one place. Mm. Which just built up over time.
Oh, and this was something that you had complained before?
Yeah.
Like months prior, weeks prior, or?
Months probably, yeah.
Okay, and they just sort of said that you're okay, yeah, before, like just yeah. ice it yeah. sort of thing.
And how long did they say that was going to rule you out for?
That was quite frustrating for me actually, because I always want to have like a plan, you know? Mm. And it was very unpredictable for that. So the first one was, I'm trying to make it as precise as possible. So I had my scan. Then I went out to Spain to see Arvin.
One of your boys. Yeah.
So I was there for like a week. Then I got back. Then I had the second scan that said it was going to be bad. Then I went back to Spain because obviously they said you can't do nothing. Just have some time off. Then you'll be good. Then I come back. Then it's COVID. You know what I mean? So that's the COVID time. But COVID time was when I became a monster, like mentally, something else. Like being by myself, it changed me for the better.
So when you say a monster, like what can you break that down?
Like my mindset sort of shifted. I was doing things which I never used to do before. So we lived up in Loughborough. My brother used to go uni there. So we just thought, we're in London doing nothing. Let's move up to Loughborough. I'm going to stay in his uni house. His flatmate's not there. Let me go there. So back then, I'd wake up at 9, do like little stretches, be in bed for the rest of the day. So that was my norm. And then my brother got onto me. He was like, what are you doing? There's so much things you can be doing. Sorting out what you eat. Educate yourself. Educate your mind. So then my routine just changed. Obviously, big thanks to my brother for that. So I started to implement meditation. Meditate every morning and started reading as well. Reading was a big factor. It helped me not only on football and outside of football as well. So when doing them two, I sort of, obviously when I read, I make loads of notes, like on my phone, the notes are just loads. I think I'm on like 42 books now.
Jeez.
So
are these like personal development books or like, is it?
It sort of shifted. So me before, I used to hate reading. Like, do not give me a book. I'll look at the page or the pictures, if it's a picture book, pictures and throw away. But the first book I read was David Goggins' Can't Hurt Me.
That's
like a really powerful story,
yeah.
Which can shape anyone's life, you know what I mean? I
feel turns like, you into like a dog,
yeah,
innit?
Like, yeah. But I feel like he's an extreme. Everything has to be a perspective to you and your situation. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I remember once, like, he broke his leg in a marathon and used some tape, taped it back and ran the rest. Like, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously, that's him, man, and you have to respect what he does. So I just feel like I had that time to myself. I was alone, isolated. We had good schedules in the day. We'd wake up at the same time, have breakfast. Everyone would work. I would work on my hip. And then I'd be going back and forth for scans as well. And yeah.
So during that period, when you're going back and forth for the scans, was there like improvement? Was the progress going as you would have liked? Or what was the message you were getting from the club?
The progress wasn't the best. It wasn't the best, to be fair. Oh, I forgot to even mention before the COVID where we was doing that program, I had a time at Coventry Hospital. Where I had a blood effusion.
Yeah.
It's where they normally treat for like frostbites and stuff, where they sort of pump blood into one area.
Very painful.
It's not necessarily painful, you're just sick all day.
I think Josh De Silva had one of those.
Oh, yeah.
When he had a hip
issue. Yeah.
Because we have a mutual, Marcus McGuinn.
Oh, okay.
He was at Nottingham Forest, and he was saying it's like the same thing.
Okay.
So I was there for like a week, and every day you just throw up, wake up, throw up, wake up, throw up. Like, that was a hard time. And I appreciate everyone that came to see me at that time because I was really going through it. So
That's actually mad, because I'm just thinking, if that was me in that situation, I'll think, you know what, poof, might have to quit this football thing. That's how I'll be thinking personally. What was you thinking?
I remember I came there with my Bible. I would read it every day. Throw up. You can't eat as well as hospital food. Like, it's not nice. I need some jollof rice, chicken, plantain. Like, I need it to be nice. Yeah, but I feel like that was like a very tough period for me. Just being there by myself. And obviously you're really sick. Don't feel well. Because obviously they're literally pumping like poison into your body. Like, you sit there all day with something up your vein.
Yeah.
And it just goes through you for, I think it's 12 hours a day.
Wow. So what made you do it?
Because I feel like my injury was a thing where it's just trial and error. Because they really didn't want to do surgery. So they wanted to do everything around it before surgery. Surgery is like the last option. So we've done the blood effusion and had to wait 12 weeks. And if there's improvement, and if there isn't, then the surgery.
So that surgery, what was it? What would it have been if you did take it? Did you have surgery?
Yeah. I had surgery after, because that didn't work.
Okay. Did you ever think maybe, for example, like we see Andy Murray in tennis, he's got a metal hip. Did you ever consider something like that?
I feel like we can touch on that later on, because it was like towards the end of my injury where it's decision time, you know what I mean? But at that stage, the main thing was just not to have surgery, because they know that if you go into somewhere like the hip, it might not always recover the same. So that was always at the back of my mind. So I just prayed that everything that happened would work.
So was this like a big sort of operation? Because you hear, so I think when we had Charlie Masunda, he was saying that there was a slim to none chance they would ever play football again. Because the hip seems to be an area that it can be sorted. It's not the most, it's not like a knee where, or like how did they assess?
I feel like the hip has more like sort of control over the whole body than like a hip. And it's much more intricate. I feel like, even when I described the pain, I could never pinpoint it. It was like somewhere so deep inside my hip. But the pain is just so bad. Like honestly, different level of pain. And the only thing I'll sort of describe is like, imagine if you have a cut, and someone is just putting alcohol, salt, and putting their fingers in it. That's the sort of pain it felt like. So definitely a lot of like nights after games and stuff where I'm just at home crying to myself, just like my head's gone. And but the surgery itself, I wouldn't say it was a massive one, because it was just a keyhole surgery. So it was just sort of eliminating the sort of little factors around the hip, but still the risk that it might not be where it needs to be.
So obviously, like, you do the blood infusion, you do all of these stuff, you're trying everything to get back fit. Talk to us about after. Was there ever light at the end of the tunnel?
You know, it was, yeah. So, like I told you, the whole pandemic situation where I sort of elevated myself mentally, that helped me with my rehab. I would always go hard in the gym, always. And that this sort of mindset shift happened just before the injury as well, because I was having a very good run of games, playing well, scoring, assisting. Then obviously the injury, then you have to sort of rebuild yourself. Then when I had my rehab, I was going hard, doing well, got back in the pitch, felt great. Honestly, felt great.
Okay, so after the hip, you got back?
Yeah, I felt great. I was in great shape, felt fit. Then, remember the first game, Notts County, came on for like 15 minutes, scored a winner. That was very emotional. Because I was out for like 13 months. Coming back to score the winner, it meant a lot to me. And obviously, I remember came back to the change room and the boys just gave me a round of applause. Meant a lot. And then, literally, a week after that, it builds back up, start to feel it again.
So at that point, what are you thinking? Are you thinking, oh no, not this again? Like, I've just worked hard to get back. I've poured my heart and soul into this, and these things happen again.
Yeah, it's just tough. You feel like, oh, what's going on? Why me?
then you just have to accept it. Sort of training like not fully, not my full capacity. Game days, not my full capacity.
So are the coaches and the club aware at this point that you had the reoccurring pain?
Yeah, for sure. And obviously there's certain things that they've done to help me or try to help me, like compression pants. Because like one thing I used to hate is at halftime, because when you get in the change room, you're cold. And when I'm cold, my hip is done. So I sort of, you know, my toes have the compression pants. Then obviously the physios would give me paracetamol, ibuprofen and things like that, just to help with the pain.
So obviously the pain comes back, but you're managing to get through training sessions and all of that kind of stuff. When does this escalate again to the point where you can't train?
When does it escalate? I think when I spoke to we had a psychiatrist at the club, and I remember after training, I just spoke to her and said, like, I can't do this. Literally, I can't be trying to force myself to be something that I'm not, obviously, or feel a way that I'm not feeling. So after that, I had another scan, and then showed it's gone worse. So that was when it was like, boom.
Worse than before when you initially...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then this is when it sort of picks up fast, because I'm having scans regularly. And then we had the sort of penultimate meeting with the doctor. Then he was saying, just outlining all the steps that could happen, obviously. And at that point, as well, I'm in my last sort of couple months of my contract. Bearing in mind, but obviously I'm a bit chill because the club already said that we'll offer you another contract, no worry. We see you for the future. But obviously in the back of my head, I'm thinking, what's going on? Because I remember the head of academy there said, we're going to offer you the contract. Then like 3 weeks came, went back to his office, said, yeah, don't worry. Another couple of weeks come, don't worry. So I'm thinking, like, what's going on? And then the news hit at the last sort of Zoom call we had, because obviously it was quite a long distance to go to Coventry back. Then he just basically said that you have a big decision to make. Obviously, the hip's not improving the way that we like it to improve for the sort of level of football you want to play at. I remember this like it was yesterday at the training ground. I had my car back then, and the doctor said, carry on playing football now and risk being in a wheelchair in the next 5 years, or stop now and live well, have the ability to play with your kids in the park and live a normal sort of life of mobility. And then I remember I just went in my car and just cried for like 3-4 hours just there. I remember I started crying when it was light, and by the time it was done, it was dark. And that sort of hit home. I remember I went to see Brennan's family, because they proper took me in like family. They were like really good. So I just felt comfortable going there. I just told them the news. And then they were obviously devastated by it. Then shortly went home. Bear in mind, I'm still on crutches then as well. So I was probably on crutches, let's say in that 2 year period, for 20 months, so like 4 months without crutches. So yeah, when I heard the news, yeah, it was something else, to be fair. Even think about it now, it's just sort of, I'm so like thankful and blessed that where I am today, you know, because I feel like it is a testimony I can share with other people that are going through very bad situations. So I remember after that, come back to London, sorry, back in London. Bearing in mind, I haven't lived at home for 6-7 years.
Yeah.
Come back home to my family house. That wasn't the best, because me, like, sometimes I actually just be by myself, you know, because I remember I told you the shift sort of happened during the injury. Because I remember my injury, like, I got so comfortable with myself. Like, I feel like when you're injured, you sort of appreciate more things and appreciate from certain people as well that you trust. So when it wasn't from certain someone, I didn't want to be around no one, you know what I mean? And sometimes they weren't always available. So I got so comfortable with myself and being in my own zone that I know I can develop and become the better person I want to be in the future. So I remember I went back home. I sold my car. I remember that. I sold my car. just before I went on holiday. Came back from holiday, went back home, living back at my mum's, struggling with everything. Like, obviously back home, I want to support my mum because that's what we're trained to do in sort of our community, you know. Obviously doing that before, so I want to continue, but you can't. And that's when the brain starts to work. You're literally looking for any sort of possible income. But I really didn't want to fall down the bad road. Like, I really wanted to stay to myself because I knew that I had a talent in business anyways. I felt like I'm such a very, like, big entrepreneur when it comes to things like that. So, yeah. But one thing I would definitely say is, like, a lot of people will not help you when you need their help. Like, when it comes to that stage. I remember I was so hungry to do anything. Like, bro, let me put me onto this. Bro, let me do a bit of that. Bro, let me do that. They'll be like, yeah. But when it's time for it, they weren't.
People weren't forthcoming with
help. Nah, man, not really. Or they might say it, but they wouldn't give you the sort of as much
energy.
Yeah.
But that's what they say. Adversity sort of reveals all. And obviously the fact that you're here with us today, doing what you're doing, is a testimony in itself, as you said. But in terms of going through that, when the doctor says you've got two decisions, be in a wheelchair or live your life, like, that's life-changing information. That's not something that you just say. Like, when he said that, how did you feel?
I remember, obviously, my mom was on the Zoom as well. And I sort of started to be quiet. My voice started breaking. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can tell. So I just said, we'll speak another day or something. I couldn't. It was too much to process. Like, my whole life, I played football, dedicated my life to it, worked hard. And someone told you can't play again. Like, that's, you might as well cut off my legs, you know what I mean? But I feel like when God closed one door, a lot of doors open, man. 100%. People need to believe that one. And definitely prayer is important to guide you. I want to give a big shout out to Marcus. He's sort of someone that pushed me towards this direction. He was someone that actually wanted to help me when I was injured. And I appreciate him. We probably talk like every other week. And he sort of pushed me towards doing this. And yeah, this is what I do now.
That's mad. So obviously, you know, you hear that devastating news. After that, was it, this is over? Like, you knew this is, there's no coming back? Or in the back of your mind, was you thinking, maybe if I do a thing here, I can do this?
I always had belief, you know. Always had belief. Because obviously there's an interesting part, obviously, after that. When obviously I came back, had my holiday with the boys. I remember I had a great holiday because I just wanted to forget about it. I partied hard.
Where did you go?
I think I went to Marbella, you know.
Jeez.
Yeah. I remember I just went there. I just wanted to have a great time. Then when I got back to reality, back to sort of everything, the hardships. And then in that period, I went to live out in Spain with Arvin and Largie. And that was probably one of the best decisions I made. I was there for probably on and off for like 4 months.
Yeah.
And them lot just welcomed me like family, man. And they helped my business so much to sort of properly, intentionally reaching out to people, be like, yo, my boy is doing this, help him with that. Obviously, just before I went there, I started the company. And then.
So was that like a sort of mechanism to say, you know what, football's done now, that chapter's closed, all focus to this?
Yeah, literally. And obviously, they helped me a lot with that, just trying to push it out there, scale it. To the next level, and it sort of picked up itself, you know, picked up quite fast. First couple of months was doing really well. Then plot twist, I have another scan. The scan says it's getting better. So I'm like, yo, what am I doing? And then I remember I had a chat with my agent, and he said, like, you don't want to live life with any regrets. Imagine in the future you thought, oh, I could have played football and I didn't. So something out of the blue came up that I could go to Club Brugge. So I went there, lived with my boy Owen Otisoy. And that was good. I felt myself getting back. They took me in and done rehab with me, so I appreciate that. And obviously got me back to where I was fit, training, felt good. Then pain again. yeah, then I felt pain and I was like, I can't do this. I said to my agent, like, you know me as a person, I will work hard, do my best in anything I do, but hand on heart, I can't do this.
And this is after the doctor told you that info?
This is like 6 months. Wait, doctor told me what? As in, I can go, it's getting better?
Yeah.
Yeah. He said there's marginal improvements, yeah, but enough for me to go back.
And how long ago was this?
2021.
2 years. Like October, November 2021.
So
the pain reoccurs and you say to your agent, listen, I'm calling it a day. Well, what's the conversation? I'm quitting, I'm retiring. Like, what is it?
In that time as well, my friend Owen was like leaving the club or doing his own thing, so I was sort of there with him, so it was quite premature that, and made sense around that time that I had the pain. Then we both came back, then it was a thing of, what am I going to do now? Then I just said, like, but like weeks before that, I was seeing my hip hurts, I was told the physios there, they'd be like, we can't really help it, like, you know what I mean? Then I came back, and I remember I was at his house, and I just said, like, yo, what else can I do in this life, you know what I mean? I want to keep scaling up and keep doing my thing, because me, I like nice things, like, hand on heart, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
I like nice things. I need to look good, smell good, be good, you know what I mean? And I don't want no pressures of having to keep up with this, keep up with that. So that's why I put in the work I do now. And bearing in mind then, my company was picking up a lot, so it kind of made the decision easy for me. Even though it was hard, then I just made a decision, yeah, that football's on there.
So when you're going through this, because you normally hear, like, even Dele Alli today, mm-hmm. like, footballers go through a lot. There's mental health, there's addiction, there's tablets that you're taking to sort of numb the pain. You know, there's all that kind of stuff. So what kind of things were you going through personally? Because it must have been tough. Yeah.
No, I'll definitely say I went through depression, for sure. Even times, like, now when I'm at home, obviously I live with my boy Toby, even time I'm just not good, like, in myself, just don't feel like, what's the point sometimes? But back then it was worse, you know. I was having some mad thoughts when I was back home, and obviously didn't have nothing to do, but I stayed strong, you know, kept God first, and you made a way, so I'm thankful for that. But I do, my friends do say I have, like, bipolar, for sure. Because, like, me, I could be so happy. And then I say, please leave me alone.
Yeah.
So I feel like my friends that get me. And I feel like that's why I have such a strong group of friends, because they properly understand me. And it's kind of hard to make new friends in that sort of stage where, like, they're very close to you. But I do feel like everything that happened sort of made me like that and what I'm like today. And
yeah, if you don't mind me asking, like, what type of thoughts were you having? Let's say your darkest day, like, what was going through your mind? Was it suicidal? Was it, because
I would never say it was to the point of suicidal, but it could be close, like, you know what I mean, where, like, you're thinking, like, football's all I know. Mm-hmm. Like, if we're going off, like, GCSEs and stuff, like, obviously I've done all right still. I'm not gonna lie to you, I was a good student, we're all smart in our family, but you're just thinking, like, what is there to do? And me, I like nice things. I cannot settle.
You need to maintain that football lifestyle.
I need to maintain and go beyond. But it was dark. And, you know, my mum's a mental health nurse, but even she can help me.
Like, is it? Wow.
Yeah, because I'm a person, I sort of keep things to myself, you know. I don't want to seem weak. But over the time, I've come to accept that it's good to talk, you know. People you trust. Yeah.
I think it's very important to talk about the mental side, because, as I said today, obviously Dele Alli just done his interview and some of the stuff that he went through, the traumas, so it kind of makes you understand people, what they go through, who they are. So, like, how do you think this sort of thing has changed you as a human being?
How has it changed me? I definitely feel like it's helped me. I do feel like you have to sort of have a good arsenal of people around you, sort of motivate you. You are what you are of your closest 6 friends, you know what I mean? And I just feel like every day is just you versus you. obviously now it's shifted from playing football. Now it's me making sure my health's okay. I'm studying, watching podcasts, meditating, praying, family. Like, I remember at a time when I was just returning back to football, I made a plan, of a weekly plan, which I never used to do. Because when you're succeeding in one thing, a lot of stuff jeopardized. Mm. And it's much more bait now in business. I can go weeks without talking to no one, not my family, friends, you know what I mean? But you hinder relationships like that. So Monday, I'll break it down into God, family, friends, what's it, diet, exercise. I think there's one more as well. If I check on my phone, but I might check. And then sort of fill it up for the whole week so you don't miss out anything, because you don't live with regrets, you know. Imagine that auntie you don't speak to, something happens to her, you regret it. Imagine, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so 100.
I'm definitely more aware of my surroundings and the people around me. And yeah, I just have to give big thanks to my brother for opening that light for me. I was very stubborn before.
Yeah, no. Very stubborn. No, big up yourself, bro. You know, your story is inspirational. I think last one on this from me is, hand on your heart, are you happy?
I'll be happy when I find peace.
So you haven't found peace yet?
No.
Why not?
Remember the first question you lot said, who are you? Once I answer that, I feel like I'll be at peace, then peace, happiness. Like, I regularly have calls with my brother and be like, something's not right. I feel good. I'm scaling to the next level. I don't feel like nothing's changing, like, within me, you know? And yeah, I definitely do feel like when I find peace, when I know exactly who I am, keep a sorry, can literally explain myself to a T, you know what I mean? Then that's when I'll be. But right now, I'm a happy guy. I'm a happy guy. But I want to be extremely happy. Yeah.
So, but again, you think that stems, have you accepted that maybe you're not going to play football again?
No. 60-40, I've accepted it. And that's taken like 2 years. Because like, it's hard. Like, I don't watch football anymore. I definitely can't go to a stadium.
Serious?
Yeah.
What? So would you say it's giving you like PTSD sort of thing?
Yeah, the whole experience, the trauma. So I don't watch football. I sort of just check on Instagram, quick goals and stuff. But I can't sort of sit down and watch a game. It's too emotional.
So is it still raw?
Yeah.
Serious.
And it'll never not be raw. My job is to look after footballers. So it's always going to be there.
So like, you always hear players that have retired sort of struggle initially because your identity is, I'm a footballer. I'm John blah blah, the footballer. Is that something you're still kind of wrestling with, that I'm no longer Keith, the footballer?
Kind of. I do feel like it's going to take some time to sort of fully accept it. Because there's days where like, because now I'm like, I'm so free. Football gives you structure. You have a sort of relationship with the boys. You know, you have days off, holidays. Now I could do whatever. Wake up when I want, you know what I mean? Sleep when I want. So now I'm sort of free and I miss sort of that structure in my life of having that core thing which I value the most, that gives me rules, gives me intention, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you think if you maybe had 100 first team appearances, you look at this differently?
I'm not sure, because the whole situation and trauma with it would be hard for anyone.
Yeah.
Definitely. And obviously, like, we've seen a lot of footballers, the rates of which retired and go bankrupt within the sort of first 3 to 5 years in any sort of sport, because all we know is football or sports, you know what I mean? So having to adapt to the real life is quite hard, for sure. So scary, like very scary.
But there's different perspectives, because now that you've started this career so young, business, you can go for 30, 40, 50 years, whereas football, that career can be cut short quickly. So it's like now, definitely. So now it's, I don't know what to say, but it's tough, man.
So talk to us about, obviously, your business, if you just want to dive a little deeper into that.
Yeah. So what, me and myself, I've always been a proactive person. Like when we go out, I want to know what time was this, what time is that, what time is that, even before starting. So someone just said, put into a business. The Marcus guy I spoke to you about, which we still have a relationship with, So I just started the company. And then literally with the help of a few friends, it kept scaling up. But it was quite easy. I used to play football. So literally friends turned to clients, give them good service, more clients, give them good service, more clients.
Yeah.
It's very simple. So I remember within sort of the first six months, we had probably looking after 60, 70 footballers, and sort of taking care of their lifestyle needs, whether it's a driver, restaurant, hotel, a jet, holiday planning, clothes. It's sort of like a one-stop bus, you know what I mean? Where you just go there, everything done.
Okay, so what gave you the idea? Was it your friend or did you sort of like...
I kind of knew I had a knack for it, but he sort of pushed me in the direction to do it, yeah.
Okay, so like talk to us about that first client, because in a business, there's always that first one that you always remember.
First client.
So how did it come in?
So excluding the friends I know, like my first client was probably Andrew Omabamedeli.
Yeah,
he was probably one of my first. And it was just so good. Like, I felt like he's my boy and I can also help him and just keep getting better. Then obviously you get Adam from Andrew.
Okay. Adam Eder.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And before that, Rob was the one that got me Andrew. Rob Nizé plays out in Belgium.
Okay.
Yeah. So sort of the people around me, then it just kept scaling up and up and up. So it was good.
So in terms, so you're basically like a middleman. So if footballers need a service, they just hit you up and say, bro, I'm going out to this country, need a restaurant.
Yeah.
What are you saying? Can you pattern it sort of thing?
I might have to hit you up, bro. don't charge me no football.
Yeah, but then, so see, them lot, it just sort of snowballed effect, you know what I mean? Keep going more and more and more. And obviously it opened up doors to other things. Like, I'll be real, I miss them days of just starting the company because I was so hungry. Like, I'll go to all the top hotels, see people that dress smart, speak to them, say, hello, this is what I do. Is there anything you need? Let me know. I'll even go to nightclubs by myself and speak to sort of footballers that I might have known, be like, yo, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And sort of, you know, that hunger, you just wake up, you wake up, you're out. And I miss that. And I think that's what sort of pushes me to do more business ventures, because that first sort of adrenaline rush you get, something else. But I do think that it's helped me doing all of that, because where I am today is because of that. And I'm so grateful I've done that, took them risks to obviously not look the way I want to look today, because obviously now I'm a different person. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be seen as that guy that's always out at a certain place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I have to be more exclusive with where you are. But yeah, I definitely do miss that start period where just hungry to do anything.
So your business is abroad as well. So what other countries do you sort of operate in?
Mainly around Europe, as in clientele, but obviously services everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of, I remember at the start, which I've continued to do now, like I'll never say no to anything. I spoke to one woman at Harris. She said someone in the AEU family out there, the Royals, they asked for like sand from a certain place and they got it to there through their concierge, and when I heard it, I was like, there's no way I can say no to anything then. So yeah, I just feel like you meet new contacts and you get new contacts by just always saying yes to everything.
When is enough?
I don't think I ever stop. Wait, as in personally?
Yeah,
I don't think I ever stop.
Why though?
I love the hustle.
But when do you take time out for yourself and say...
That's what I'm struggling to do. That's a great question. That is a great question. There's so many times I just feel like... leave my phone away for like a week and clear my... But if I leave my phone for a week, I think it'll be like 1,000 messages. Like 2,000 missed calls, so many emails. So it's like I'm always doing this. And I built the company in itself that it's me. I've built all these relationship people. I've actually taken time. I've been on holidays with my clients, went to their houses, spent time with them. Like, it's proper deep. So it's not a thing where I can just make it a corporate company where there's 50 people, you call them, they're tired from doing that. That takes away that sort of USP that I have, you know what I mean?
So typically, what does a day in your life look like?
Right now, okay. Summer period. I go to sleep at 4:30 or 5 a.m., maybe 6 a.m. Okay, so I wake up at like 12,
have all my vitamins. Actually, let me not sound too cliche when I talk about this, but I do wake up, have my vitamins, coffee, green tea, I mean, green sort of drink with all the sort of nutrients you need. Head down to the gym, do a session. Then I'm just on my phone. Like, work just comes. Need a driver. Okay, cool. Need a hotel. Okay, cool. Need you to connect me to a mortgage broker. Okay, cool. Need you to do this. You know what I mean? It's just ever flowing. And then there's the night before I even go to sleep, I check my phone. Who have I not spoke to in a while? I text them. Just have general chat, you know? How are you? So just text them. So by the time you wake up in the morning, they've already messaged you that you pick it up.
Yeah, I read that.
I've been doing that literally like 2-3 times a week for like the past couple of years. So make sure you keep a relationship with everyone. It's important.
I respect that. So we just want to move on to life outside of business. Usually it's life outside of football, but what does Keith like getting up to in his downtime?
Downtime, me. Some people say I'm like outside.
You're like out here, man. Let's see you're out here. Your instant popping off.
No, because me, I'm a person. If you tell me to do something, I'm not going to say no. Mm. Like, you can call me and say, let's go Australia tomorrow. I'll say, cool. Send me the flight deals. Like, I'm so outgoing. And especially if it's with the right crowd, you know. My boy calls me. So, definitely say I'm an outgoing person. But then, like, when I'm out, I could just be with myself. Like, it's weird. Mm-hmm. People say that I'm weird. Because I can go out, have fun, then I need time to myself, I'm on my phone. I need to just relax, downtime, then I back up. You know what I mean? That's why I say my friends say I have bipolar in that sense.
So it's that yin and the yang, basically. Like,
or maybe I'll go out and then I'll see someone that brings back my past memories and stuff, and I'll be like, oh, okay. Then I bring myself back up. Yeah. I think that's it. I like, obviously, spending time with my friends. Like, there's nothing better than just all your friends come in the house, you have food, and just talk about life. You could talk about so many things. Just appreciate that. I like going out. And I like working as well. I actually love what I do.
So in terms of like your businesses, I know we're talking about life outside of business, but what other interests have you got? Because I know you've got your concierge company that's doing very, very well. Yeah. What's something else that you've got your eye on that in the future I might have to dabble in that?
No, I feel like there is definitely a diverse portfolio to myself. The concierge allows me to pick at the best ones in there. So there is definitely a few things I'm looking to just about whether it's right. So tackle more the jewelry, which is definitely something I'm looking to do very soon. And I feel like maybe transportation, I've something around that. And also an app, and also another app. Like, I have so many ideas in my head, like, I can't fail.
We say you don't want to get into podcasting.
No, I'm not sure. I'll probably ask questions and leave. And come back.
What about music? What are you rocking with? What are you listening to at the minute? What's the playlist?
Music. Oh, right now it's I'm a Piano. It's going crazy. Like,
serious.
I can't lie. When I'm in the shower, you got a little dance. Like me, I like to dance. You know?
Yeah.
So I just play I'm a Piano.
Do you know about Danky Sounds?
No, what's that?
It's like a my piano sort of like day party popping off.
I might have to see Keith there. See him on Instagram busting a few shapes.
maybe.
Yeah. So, anything else other than my piano, or it ends there at the minute?
Can I check my playlist?
Yeah.
You know what's funny? You've been itching to look at your phone, didn't
it? That's how you know, isn't it? I told you, I've been chilling now. I have 104 notifications.
Wow.
Yes, yeah, so this is just normal. What am I listening to right now? I have two playlists, like one which is just like sort of what's around now. Then I have sort of a deep one where like it's personal songs of certain situations, or let's say everything. Like if you shuffle my phone, you could probably go from Adele to Lil Baby to a bit I'm a Piano to Stormzy to Rema.
Yeah.
It's even Labyrinth, Bastille. I have everything in here. Me, I have music for the moods I'm in, innit?
Yeah.
So I feel like it's just that. My favourite artist. Don't have one. Burna Boy, maybe.
Okay. Did you go to his concert?
I've been to one of the concerts, not the recent one, the one before that. But Burna Boy is something else. Okay. Who do I listen to the most? And I'm lying. My favorite artist, Omaleo.
Serious. That's a funny. That's a different one.
Yeah, because people go for the main ones, the Burna Boys, Ashake, Wizkid, Davido.
No, 100%. That song, Understand.
One of the goats. That song's a banger.
That song's crazy.
So you're 22, very, very young, and to like do what you're doing, I think it's commendable, bro. So what's your goals for the future?
Goals in what aspect?
So in terms of like life, business?
Business, probably diversify, but with purpose, you know, not just whilst I'm doing this, like I actually have this. So I have a big love for food. I love cooking. I even have a YouTube channel.
I saw YouTube, the chicken cooking. I saw it marinated that chicken, didn't it?
Well, it tastes good. But I definitely want to do something around that, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a shisha, definitely something will be done. What else is there? Well, one thing I want to say as well, when I like sort of meditate, I manifest a lot of stuff in it. So I'm at a point now where I've manifested most of the things I want to do. So it's like I need to sort of replan, reset goals. And I'm in that period now. I had a chat with my brother yesterday about that. We set some sort of short-term goals, but long-term, it's definitely something I want to work on. Obviously, business-wise, I have that. But I feel like I need to set more hard relationships with a lot of people around me, which I've been doing from like the start of the year, like properly implementing it. But long term, just be happy. Wake up with a good purpose, and then that's it.
No, I love that, man. I think we'll be doing this podcast a disservice if we don't talk about fashion, because you see, you're getting shy because we know you're about your drip.
I just like to look good, you know, look good, feel good, talk good. Like me, I'm not a shy guy. If I go out and I see sort of footballers or people I can connect with, I'm going over to talk to you. I'm saying I'm like, hi, how are you doing? You have to adapt. Knowing how to adapt is very important because I have my clients' list range from like every sort of occupation, I mean, so it's important to be able to speak to them. But yeah, fashion, I love. My best friend, like one of my best friends, is a stylist. Personal shopper stylist. So it's quite easy to know what's new, what's trending. One of my other friends owns a sneaker store.
Very well connected. Very, very well connected. So anything you need, I've got this guy.
Anything. Not just clothes, by the way. Anything. Just WhatsApp and that's it. Fashion I love. I even like make my fits before. I go and pick colour. Copy and paste it. Then buy it. Done. On to the next.
So what brands are you rocking with at the minute? Everyone's rocking that rooting.
Rude. Yeah, I have a little bit. I love Rick Owen.
Okay.
They're nice. What else? LV obviously is just always going to be good.
Yeah.
Especially now for a while.
Burberry's come back as well.
I do appreciate it, but not really. And then I sort of want to go for brands which no one really wears, but it's lit. You know what I mean? There's a brand called Bode. That's a very nice sort of things that they make. What other brands are there? There's, I don't know how to say it, like Louis Vuitton, yeah, spelled Loewe. Yeah, it's quite nice. There's some nice pieces. Off the top of my head, I can't remember, but that's the sort of stuff I want to go for. Because my friend at personal shop, I'll be like, oh, he's worn it, I don't want to wear it.
You want that exclusivity, isn't it? So people are looking at Keith, oh, what's he rocking, man? I need to get that. I can't find it. 100%.
Bro, what track is this? This track is cold.
This is from Genius.
Okay.
I'm quite close to them over there, so I just saw it. So it was lit.
Genius, if you're watching, if you don't mind sending us some freebies,
send us.
Genius, they're best for the jeans, man. Their jeans are crazy. I feel like they supply everyone. Yeah, they're good, man.
Last one from me. You're going on date night with the missus.
Why are you laughing? No missus?
Or? I do not have a missus.
All right. You're going on date night with a new spice that you've linked up with. Mayfair, out there. What's the outfit of choice?
Number one, I wouldn't go on a date in Mayfair.
Okay.
Too big. If it's a date, I probably want to go to another country or something.
Jeez. Boy, you're on that flying out today.
Right, you got that bread, yo.
No, but I don't remember the last time I've been on a date, to be fair. I don't remember. Like, proper date. Don't remember. Maybe like shisha and that, but. But on a date now, I'll probably just wear what I normally wear. I don't really change for no one, you know.
Jeez. Just
put it on and leave the house.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you. Hey, Jenny, what?
No, I'm good. I just want to say thanks for coming on, bro, and sharing your story. No, and as we said before, we always want to like talk to everyone in football, whether that's players that are playing now, retired, and stuff like that. And especially your journey to see that you've come out the other side. Because some people, they won't be able to recover with the fact that they can't play football. But you've used that as fuel to like take onto your journey and crack the next thing you're doing. So big up, bro.
No, I appreciate it, man. Thank you. Thank you, man. I feel like when people tell me that, it sort of hits me, you know. Like, well, you're actually doing well, because I'm always in sort of survival mode. I really work hard. Well, I like to think I work hard, you know what I mean? So it's good to have sometimes when people say that.
Because like injuries, it can leave like a devastating mark on people that they're not the same after it, and they're sort of defined by that episode. But as I said, you've come out and you're very young. You're 22. Like, bro. You're doing your thing, bro. So keep up, man.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for coming here today. We've got a closing tradition on this podcast where we ask the guest that's been grilled. And I would say grilled. I'm going to say grilled. I'm going to go grilled. Grilled by us. To recommend a guest in football that would be a good fit for this platform.
Oh, I'll definitely say Arvin. Arvin. He plays out in Spain. Almeria. Because he's a very bubbly guy. Make you lot laugh all day. I would say him.
We're going to leave it there. That's another episode of the Beautiful Game Podcast. Until next time, over and out. Peace.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.